Music provided by Armstrong. Visit armstrongofficial.com to hear more badass music.
Welcome to the TriCast Gaming Podcast.
Greetings and welcome everyone to episode number 94 of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Philip Grimlock-Keeney, and I'm joined tonight by Jason Neons Andrews. Jason, it's wonderful to have you back on the show. I've missed you. It's been a while. It's been some unfortunate circumstances, some lemony snickets going on.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're back. What is it,
like 2 weeks?
It's been more than that.
No, I think it's just 2 weeks.
No way.
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
I mean, trust me, I know a day without me feels like an eternity.
Maybe you're right, but like I feel like it was like
episodes that I've been gone.
I feel like it's been like three out of the last four or something like that then.
Oh, you know what it is?
What is it?
You have not been with me over three because 2 weeks ago it was just me and Mike.
No, because like 2 weeks ago you had your internet issue.
Oh, you're right. I was just thinking of like me being in travel and all that stuff. You're right. Yeah.
No, I think you've...
Yeah, the neighbor had like landscaping and stuff done where they came in and took out a tree and like, you know, did a bunch of stuff. And
they
cut the fiber for like the whole neighborhood.
Yeah. Cause
which was crazy when they came and repaired that we had internet restored, but there was just like literally a fiber like on top of the, like they didn't bury it. It was just like,
right.
They just like ran it to just get it back. And it was just like laying across the street, like going all the way down the road for like seven houses, you know, and we live on big blocks.
Did they get that? So
it's probably yet? Like a city block worth of, oh yeah, it's buried now, but
okay.
For like a week, it was just like fiber sitting on top of the, like people were driving over it to get into their driveway.
They must put some decent shielding on that cable
to
protect it. Yeah, they must, because like I know,
because it's glass. That's what fiber optic is.
Right, right. And in my job, I deal with a lot of electronics as well, and we've installed a lot of fiber. And fiber is very, you know, you have to be very careful with it.
Yeah.
For sure. Of course, we want it in its lightest form on aircraft. So they, you know, city fiber installations, they probably can have a much
more. Well, and again, right, you said, I don't know how thick or how sturdy the cable it was and what they all have to do when they're burying these things to make sure that it doesn't go all haywire, right? Make sure, like, a gopher doesn't chew into it or something.
Right, yeah. Like some kind of burrowing animal. Yeah, yeah. For sure. Well, regardless of the circumstances, it is great to have you back on the show. You've missed a couple bangers. There was some interesting news, and then you're back for a dull week, but that's okay.
You know, that's how it works.
Yeah, we're a news podcast.
Are you trying to say that I'm the problem here?
No, I just missed
you. It's dull because I'm back? I get you.
No. I missed your input into some of the topics that we've gotten to discuss recently. So it's good to have you back, and hopefully you'll be with us much more frequently going forward. Especially as we start to get into the summer. And, you know, there was the news of the Xbox showcase that's coming up on June 12th. And we've got some more news regarding showcases this summer coming up in the show. So, and we're marching towards episode number 100. We're only, after this one, only 100. Six episodes away.
Yeah.
So, or including this one, we're six episodes away, right?
That's the one we're planning on streaming live in the nude, right?
I don't know about that. I haven't signed up for that yet.
Oh, we have to do something special.
Yes, but maybe not in the nude.
Oh, gosh. I mean, you know what? You try to have fun on this show, and Phil just comes in and just nixes everything.
Yeah, I see what I do what I do. But, all right, well, I have something fun for you, though, for this show.
Okay.
Maybe not stripping, but I think this is a fun little shoot
You should say topic. Maybe not. So the stripping is still on the table?
For you, maybe just.
Okay.
But I found this survey. So kind of leading into the whole boneless versus bone-in wings from last week that I did with Mike, I found a survey that's pretty funny. So the whole premise of this, it started with mac and cheese. And how do you eat mac and cheese? Is it a fork or is it a spoon? What do you use?
So I have this internal conflict of my own. Sometimes I use a fork, sometimes I use a spoon, and I fight with myself on which one I should be using. I think I prefer a spoon.
You prefer the spoon?
It's weird. Okay, so first off, let me start this, and maybe we'll go even more controversial here.
Okay.
Because people are either a Kraft Mac person. I mean, obviously, like a good homemade or really good, you know, like baked
is
best, right? But like just for like the quick Mac, right? People are either Kraft or they're Velveeta. Like,
yeah.
Like there's like people are very hard on one side or the other.
And yeah.
My wife is a Kraft and I'm a Velveeta guy. So we have both in the house so that I can have Velveeta and she can have Kraft.
That's okay? Tough.
And I will say, so when I'm making mine and I'm making Velveeta and you're like stirring in the cheese, right?
Uh-huh.
The fork stirs the cheese in better.
Uh-huh.
But I prefer to eat it with a spoon.
You're like one of those that's like, I got to get all the cheese sauce. I can't lose any cheese sauce.
Oh yeah, bro.
Yeah. No. Oh
man, like I want some right now.
So if I'm just like Kraft mac and cheese, then like I get it because those are like the thinnest noodles you're ever likely to meet. Like the lead in a regular pencil is thicker in diameter than the noodles in Kraft mac and cheese. So I could maybe understand the spoon there, but like I'm one of those guys that I've graduated. I can't just go shitty box Kraft mac and cheese anymore. I gotta get gourmet shells and cheese. Okay.
Oh, dude. Look, I'm a shells and cheese Velveeta guy. I agree.
Yeah.
So all my Velveeta is shells. Okay. I'll say that. I'm a shells guy. But yeah, I'm going to make an executive decision here. And if I had this in my house, this would be my weapon of choice for conquering my mac and cheese. I want a freaking spork. Okay.
Spork.
I don't own one, but I'm going to go get me a damn spork so I can start eating my mac and cheese.
There you go. I just go between. No. Well, I got to say, though, I'm a fork guy. I'm a fork guy on the mac and cheese all day.
You're missing out on the best part, the cheese.
Now, that said, I use the dessert forks.
To be fair, too, though, that Kraft mac and cheese, you can just drink that shit. I mean, it's just the most watered down. So
it is. It's gross.
I guess you're only after the noodle. You're not after that crappy cheese. So why would you want a spoon to make sure you get every last drop? Yeah. So, I understand why you wouldn't want a spoon, but come to my side where it's actually liquid gold.
But see, I told you, I do the shells and cheese, but I want the fork.
Yeah, but you do the Kraft shells.
No, I don't eat Kraft.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
No, I get the gourmet shells and cheese.
Okay.
Have you tried the gourmet? Because like it's not just regular cheese too. Like they have like different flavors and stuff.
But it's not like yes, I have.
Yeah. I think it's Velveeta brand.
They have some they have like Cheeto branded ones and stuff like that.
Oh, I'm just talking about that. No.
Terrible. Highly do not get the gosh damn. I know the ones you're talking about though.
Yeah.
I'm just a straight up, just standard. The next time I go to the store, I'm going to get some of the good stuff because I guess I haven't tried the premier stuff. I've seen it on the shelves. I just get the standard, just Velveeta shells. I'm good.
The good stuff is good for you. All right. Well, according to the survey, I think they took a polling size of 5,000 Americans. This is from BuzzFeed. 77% of Americans use a fork to eat mac and cheese. Not a spoon. So you are in the minority, my friend. You are in the minority.
I mean, this is BuzzFeed. Where's BuzzFeed located? I feel like BuzzFeed is California.
Yeah. Are you trying to say?
They surveyed all California. So they'd be like, we went to the weirdest place on earth and we talked to people and they all confirm to do it.
I don't know what to tell you, man. 77%.
No.
Mm-mm. All right. Here you go. There's more though. Let's try to quick fire these ones. Ice cream cake, fork or a spoon?
Spoon.
So like, I guess it depends on the type of ice cream cake, but like, most of the ice cream cakes I've had.
Anything involving ice. Well, okay. Like you're talking about an actual ice cream cake, not cake and ice cream.
Yeah. No.
Oh, okay. Fork.
Okay.
But if I have like a piece of cake with an ice cream scoop on the side, or a pie with an ice cream scoop on the side, I want a spoon.
I'm with you there. I think we're on we're on the same wavelength here.
No, I'm on a fork.
Okay, I'm good with that answer. Now, according to this poll, 54% of Americans go fork. 45% go spoon. A lot more people go spoon with ice cream cake than on mac and cheese. All right, here you go. Here's the next one. Potato salad.
I don't know that I... So I'm trying to think. Like, when I have potato salad, it's probably always a fork. Because the other things I'm eating alongside of it require a fork.
Fair, yeah. I'm with you there. 80%.
It's not like I have a specific preference on eating that. It's just what's the utensil that I'm using when I have
potato salad. Always it's got a like a steak or something off the grill. Yeah, you got
brisket or something. Yeah, it's a fork.
Dude, I'm with you. Yeah. Well, 80% of Americans are also with you. 80% say they use a fork with potato salad. All right, what about pie? Not pie and ice cream, just pie. You got pie by itself, what are you eating it with? A spoon?
Yeah, absolutely.
See, I think again, I'm 50-50 on this.
Make sure
one.
I scoop up all of that goodness, man. Like, I'm a spoon.
I'm with you there.
I don't matter what kind of pie it is.
Sometimes you got to do a little bit of cutting with pie. You know, you got to get through the pie crust.
The only pie that I can right this second tell you, you know what? I can see myself eating it with a fork, and I probably have, is pumpkin.
Okay. But, like, I mean, okay, what about like key lime pie? Key lime pie, or like you said, pumpkin pie, or some of the, like, because you just said ice cream cake, you go fork. But now with pie, you're saying you go spoon. I don't understand.
I don't know that I feel strongly enough either way on pie, because I'm stopping and I'm thinking back, and I've used both.
I think I'm with you on this one. I actually like whatever's easiest at hand, I'm going for
pie. I think
that's
right. Yeah.
But according to this survey, it's overwhelming. 83% of Americans go fork. Overwhelming. Go fork.
And I'm sitting there thinking about it too now. Like, let's say you go to a restaurant, you go to order a piece of pie. They bring you a fork. They don't bring you a spoon.
That's true. That is true. Maybe we're on to something. All right. Next one. Rice.
A spoon.
You go on spoon? I'm just like, if I'm eating like good rice, you know, like good Indian basmati rice or something like that, I'm going fork because that stuff's really good and sticky and clumpy, you know? But if it's like...
You're talking more of a casserole than an actual...
I guess.
Like, just rice. A casserole, I could see, but a fork. But like just rice, you have a spoon.
Okay, fair enough. 58% of Americans are going fork, though. 31%.
It sounds like Americans are prejudiced.
We are biased spoons. Towards forks. We do not like spoons. Spoons are the minority in this country, okay? We treat them with disrespect, it seems.
You just need a good spooning.
All right, mashed potatoes. Mashed potatoes. Are you going fork or spoon on mashed potatoes? We got one more after this.
Same thing. I almost always have a fork when I'm eating mashed potatoes.
I agree, because what you eat it with. Yeah. 70% say a fork as well. Yep. All right, last one, spaghetti. Fork or spoon?
This better be 99% fork. What psycho out there is eating this with the spoon?
So the answer is 91% use a fork.
I mean,
0% use a spoon. 9% use a fork and spoon. You know, the twirl and scoop with the spoon.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
That's what the survey says. That's what the survey says. All right. Well, that was fun. I think it's fun to like understand people's weird quirks and what they do. I'm even more probably strange with spaghetti. I always cut mine up.
I catch myself in a restaurant, you know, it's like I'm out with like clients or something and we're at an Italian place and I've got like Alfredo and I catch myself with the like trying to like twist the spoon onto a fork and then ultimately like in front of like a, you know, vice president or something or a CEO and I'm slurping up the like long string of, you know, like, oh yeah, dude, on a side note, fried chicken.
Fried chicken.
Do you eat fried chicken with utensils, or do you just hold it and eat it?
You want to know something? This is probably going to get me some hate mail. Okay, I tend to avoid fried chicken simply because the only way to eat it is with your hands, and I don't like getting my hands dirty when I'm eating.
So I
just end up avoid eating fried chicken.
I love fried chicken, and I devour fried chicken, whether it's a wing, a thigh, a leg, you know, and I just two hands and I'm in it and it's all over my hands and my face. And my wife always gives me so much shit about, like, I cannot believe you eat like this in front of other human beings. Like you do this in public, you get, you know what I mean? Like,
this was the crux of the boneless versus bone in wings debate last week. Cause I was like, I gotta wings, go boneless, I'm eating it with a fork. Cause I do not like to get messy while I eat.
Well, but there's a difference to me though. I prefer boneless on wings because wings are sauced, right? Mm-hmm. Fried chicken, I want to just grip and rip it, man. Like,
you just want to grip, you know, and rip,
like,
and go.
Like, you get a little greasy, you know what I mean? But it's not like barbecue sauce draped all over my fingers, right? Like,
yeah.
Fair. So on wings, I actually do prefer, and there's so many people who think like, oh, bone in, you got to do bone in, blah, blah, blah. Who gives a crap? And that's the other thing is I'm like, I feel like I get more chicken.
Oh yeah. Definitely get more chicken.
In a boneless than like little morsels I'm getting on the shitty little wings that they're giving me. Cause those ain't chickens.
Dude, I need like 30 bone in wings to like 10 boneless.
Well, that's the next thing is like, again, the whole thing is, it's like, oh, it's chicken wings. No, it ain't. It's not chicken wings. Has anybody seen a chicken? Those are not chicken wings. I don't know what kind of freaking bird. This is like, it's a conspiracy. I'm telling you right now. They're feeding all of you freaking pigeons, and all of you think you're getting chickens. Okay. You're all eating pigeons.
Yeah. If you get fried chicken and you get a fried chicken wing, it don't look nothing like the chicken wings.
I'm telling you, dude, all of the wings, when you go to any wing place, it ain't no damn chicken.
It's like, why are there so many pigeons on top of the Buffalo Wild Wings? Yeah, that's gross. All right. Yeah, I'm definitely not getting bone-in wings ever again.
For sure, right? Whereas I can promise you, you get the boneless, it's a freaking chicken.
It's like the foot. It's
it's like the chest. It's not, it's even like, a no, freaking,
it's like the little like fat
anymore.
Piece that connects the leg to the body. That's what is probably. Oh,
I don't know. Well, I don't regardless, even think it's
now I'm not hungry.
The meat that, I'll say this, the meat that Buffalo Wild Wings and Chick-fil-A are buying are not the same. That's good to tell you.
It's
they
true.
Are not buying it from the same vendor.
It's true. Speaking of Chick-fil-A, that is what I ate for dinner. But should we get on into some video games? Mm-hmm. All right, yeah, because you know what? Each and every week, we do get together to channel our virtues through the Triforce to provide you, the listener, all the hottest topics from the mythical world of video games. We also add in as much of our colorful thoughts and Philip monologues as you can handle in a week, simply because we love video games and discussing them. If you like what you hear, please consider subscribing on your podcasting app of choice. And if you really enjoy it, please share on social media or directly with your friends. The show continues to grow thanks to all of your wonderful support. You can find us on Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram at TriCastGamingP1 and on our website, TriCastGamingPodcast.com. DM us on any platform with your questions. Be happy to read them out on the show. All right, let's get into what we are playing this week. I'm going to go first, Jason, because I'm just going to go first. I don't know what to say. I just want to go first because you're going to talk about your game, your love, and you know what? There you go. Best for last, I guess. So I've been doing two things this week. I said last week on the show that I had started Ghostwire Tokyo. I was only like 30 minutes into it. Well, I played a bunch of Ghostwire Tokyo last week. Mm-hmm. Probably like 10 hours of it, man. Dude, I sunk hard into this game. It is awesome. It is really fun game. I love like the art style that's going on. I love the animations of like how you use the spells and you fight the ghost enemies. I like the art style, like the characters of the ghosts that you mm-hmm. fight. They call them, what do they call? I forget what they call them now. They don't call them ghosts. They call them visitors. That's what they call them. Some of them are super creepy, dude. Like headless, like little headless Sailor Moon girls running at you, and dudes with umbrellas slowly marching on you, not stopping. Like, it's just some creepy stuff. It's not really a scary game, but there is some creepy imagery there that's really cool. Yeah. I love all the little cats all over the place, and all the shop owners are actually cats that talk to you. It's pretty funny. Yeah, I don't know. And the story is, I find actually a little bit compelling. This idea, it's kind of similar to Moon Knight, where you have your main character has two competing. Now, it's not internal personalities. It is actually some kind of spirit or other person that has come into his body, and they compete with each other. But it's a similar back and forth dialogue of these two competing personalities in the main character. That is really interesting. I've enjoyed it. I mean, the story is probably a little bit campy, but I've had fun with it. I am loving this game so far. If you had to have me pick a game of the year so far right now, it would be Ghostwire Tokyo. And honestly, sure. I was totally don't care about this game from the moment it was announced to literally days before it came out. I was like, do not care. And then all of a sudden, I don't know, I saw some people that I really trust saying good things about it. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go check it out. And it just a really, really excellent game so far. I really loving it. A lot of collectibles. I mean, it's this open world Tokyo, Japan type game. Mm-hmm. A lot of cool collectibles and things to go find and do. And the combat's fun and engaging. A lot of traversal, moving up through buildings and skyscrapers and stuff like that. I'm really loving this. I can't wait to jump in more to it. This weekend and get a little bit farther into it. I will almost certainly platinum this game. It's going to be a good ride. I'm really enjoying it. So Ghostwire Tokyo, go check out some videos if you haven't of this game. Take a look at it. You'll see the art style is really striking. A lot of color to it. A lot of cool animations. It's just really visually really pleasing to watch and look at while you're playing the game. So really liking that. And then the other thing I've been doing this week is Halo Infinite. So season 2 of Halo Infinite launched, went live this week. So I've been playing a little bit of that. Tried out the new game mode, The Last Spartan Standing, which I guess is probably the closest thing to a battle royale that it's going to have. I mean, it's only 12 people. You have 5 lives. So when you die, you're not instantly out. You have 5 lives. And then the other cool thing about it is that as you get kills, so you're not looking for weapon drops in the world. You're looking to get kills. And when you get kills, you level up and you can, you start the game with just a pistol. Mm-hmm. If you get 1 kill, then you get a mangler. If you get 3 kills, then you get an assault rifle.
Yeah.
And so on and so on. So
yeah, there's modes that exist in that in a couple of the games. Yeah, I get you.
So that's the really neat part of it. I like that. And then of course I like the lives part, having 5 lives so that it's not I made 1 mistake and now I'm out. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. I've only played a few rounds of that. I went back to play, regular Halo modes because I was playing with my brother. Never got to see the new map, which is really annoying. I feel like they should wait the new map a little bit, at least in the first week, so that when you get into these playlists, that new map is coming up a little bit more often.
Yeah.
But I've played 3 or 4 hours of it now this week, and I haven't seen the new map yet, which is absurd to me. I don't understand how they would do that. And then also it's kind of frustrating is their sort of launch event challenge thing is focusing on The Last Spartan Standing, which kind of makes sense, but all of the challenges being tied to that is frustrating because it's a free for all event. You're not teaming up with people. And so, I like Halo because I like playing with my brother. I like playing with Tyler, with Mike.
Yep.
And I can't play with them if I want to play the new game mode. So then I'm like, well, I'll just work on these other challenges. Well, eventually I get just because of the nature of the way they do the challenges in Halo, which I've always found frustrating, is that you have a list of 20 challenges or whatever for that week, but you only get to work on 4 at a time. And as you complete one, it'll replace it with another one. So you eventually get to the point where, the only challenges I have left in my queue that I can work on are Last Spartan Standing challenges. So it's like, come on, guys.
And there's no reroll or refresh of the quest.
You can, but typically when you roll out one of the type, it'll roll in one, because the Last Spartan Standing is a special event right now. So it'll just roll in. When you complete challenges for that, you actually earn rewards on a different bar besides your season pass bar, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So it's almost like, you know, like in Rocket League when they do special events and you still have your season pass challenges, yeah. but then you also have separate challenges yeah. for the special event yeah. and you get different rewards for that. Yeah. It's that basically.
Okay.
So when you swap out a challenge, it's just swapping out a challenge for that same event. So like the only way to like get other challenges back in is just go play Last Spartan Standing, which is, you know, if I'm hanging out with my brother and Tyler or whatever, that's not very helpful. So, overall, you know, it seems like this, you know, it seems like Halo Infinite's sort of struggles continue and that this additional season is not fixing it, which is really disappointing. It makes me pretty sad to see that. I mean, the core game is still so much fun. If they could just get all of the additional trappings around it to keep people in it and playing it and engaged with it, I think this game could take off. But right now, they're really dropping the ball on it. So, I don't know. I'm going to keep playing. I'm trying not to be too negative on it. I mean, I consistently played like every week since the game came out. I've played more and less depending on my mood of the week, but I have played every week since the game came out. So there's something there. But I don't think, like, if you fell off Halo and were like, I'm waiting for like something game changing to come back to it, I don't think this is it.
Okay.
So that's kind of my,
you're still needing that.
I'm still needing a little bit more. I mean, they did bring back King of the Hill, which is really cool. So they brought back King of the Hill and another couple game type modes for the quick play map set. And so it's much more like it used to be that like in the quick play match set, it was like half of it was still Slayer matches. So you was just basically like playing Team Slayer again.
Yeah.
But now they've got these other game modes in it and it's much more weighted to vary the different types of game modes. So I think the quick play list is as good as it's been since launch at this point. And I love having King of the Hill back. That's super fun. I like what's going on there. So that's what I'm going to end on. End on a positive note. Something good about this new season.
Okay. Well, so then I guess season, right? We'll talk about, so the game I've been playing is The Division 2. And I played Division 1 and played Division 2, and I loved the game. And essentially the only thing that got me off of The Division 2 was, this is factual. This is not like an over-exaggeration. But me and my group of friends that we play with when we played The Division, the raid that was out at Division 2's launch, they have, so the Division has a like a ladder or a ranking where your completion time for the raid. And we were literally number 10 in the world.
Wow.
On completion time of the raid. Didn't even do it on purpose.
That's funny.
We weren't like speedrunners. We weren't like had this like goal or strategy. We had been doing the raid, right? And we had gotten pretty good at it. And we were all pretty geared and we were blasting through and we just had like a really good run, right? Like it wasn't on purpose or anything like that, right?
Right.
And we probably couldn't do it again if we tried, right? Like,
right.
But we were number 10 in the world. And so we were all really dang geared. But ultimately, you know, then they had some DLC and some things come out. And it just was so like, I liked the game. And the gameplay was good. What got me out of it was it's very, very gear based. And everything with the Division 2 is set up like where it was all RNG, right? Like, okay, this is the build I want. I got my basic, like, okay, I have this talent on my backpack and this talent on my chest, or I've got this gear set or this weapon, but then they all have stats. So there's like armor or weapon damage or crit chance or crit damage, and it's all just pure RNG. And you have to like farm and just play and 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 hope you get lucky. There's that roll of dice and there's the super rare chance that you get a completely maxed out God rolled item, right?
Right.
And that's it. And so because it was just so like, okay, if you spend 1,000 hours in the game, eventually you're going to have everything, you know, min maxed. But other than that, that's all you can do. It's just play and get lucky. And so we all just kind of just died off of it because the RNG of the game pushed us away.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of like heavy, heavy RNG. I like having
all the RNG is gone
to something.
All of the RNG is gone now. Okay. Not all of it, but like 90%. So my entire crew is back playing the Division right now. Playing. And, so essentially what they did, they changed it so that now, when you play, so before everything was you went to level 30, and once you hit level 30, then your level didn't matter anymore. Then it was a gear score, and items had a gear score number, and there was a cap. So like what Destiny is with light, right?
Right.
That's the way the Division worked. Now with this new expansion that's out, it is, they extended it to level 40, and you go to 40 and it's all 40. There's no more gear score. It is just, you know, there's level 40 gear and gear score doesn't matter anymore. But what they did is they added a new watch that essentially works as like Paragon levels, like from Diablo, right? So you can continuously do things to level your watch and then take the watch levels and pump them into stats. So into weapon damage and health and armor and crit chance, et cetera, right? And so that part's cool. You know, it rewards people who play a ton and continue to like push and grind. But then when it comes to the gear, what they did is now, let's say before it was like, all right, I know I want this backpack. Rather than just like, well, let's just go and just do random shit and play and hope that, so, you know, I hope I just get completely, totally lucky to get this backpack. Now the entire map is loot based and it changes and rotates every day. So like you open up the map and there's all of these icons all over the map. And it says like, okay, if you want backpacks, you do this mission. And so you can do that mission and you can just do it over and over and over and over and over that day to like spam backpacks. Now you could get a ton of backpacks, but it's an increased loot of backpacks, right? And that's not the only thing you'll get there. It's just like the mass majority of your drops will be the loot specification, right?
Interesting.
Or you can say, okay, I want this brand set. So, all right, I know I want, you know, Petrov Defense. Okay, so I'm after Petrov Defense. I find where Petrov Defense is on the map. It's in the open world of this area. I just do things in the open world, and it will most likely drop Petrov. Now, that could mean it could be a chest, a glove, a knee pad, but it's Petrov. And then I have a higher chance of getting the item that I want at the rolls that I want. On top of that, then they took it around, and now there is a recalibration table. So I can take an item that has one god rolled stat, but the other two are terrible. And I can go to the table, and instead of just basically, I always say disenchanting because it's from my WoW days, but instead of like disassembling the weapon, right? Where you like just get like the gun parts back from it or whatever, I can extract that perk off of it, or I can extract that core attribute off of it. So if I got a god rolled, you know, max crit chance on a gun, I can take it off. And then later on, I find, you know, a weapon that has amazing weapon damage and amazing, you know, talent, but its crit chance is terrible. Well, now I can go in and add one item to any, I can replace an attribute that's on it with any other. And you can strip anything off of it. So I can strip the armor off of, you know, gear. I can strip crit chance or the talent, or I mean, I can strip all the stuff off of it, but then I can only add that and it deletes that item. But then you have this like recalibration library, right? So I have a library of all of the things that I have stripped, and they're item specific. So like the crit chance is specific to just knees. So I found a knee pad that has the highest crit chance, and it tells you like, all right, there's 20 different attributes that could be for this item. You have currently 12 of them maxed, right? And it shows you the whole, it's like this like index book, this catalog.
Wow.
And so you're able to just like go there, dump everything into it, and then find stuff that you have then gone to your allocated loot area to find that item. You find one that's really close to a god roll, if not a god roll already, and then you can adjust it to it. Then the last thing that they have done to take all of the RNG out of it is they have the optimization table. So optimization table would be like, all right, I found a item that I love the item. It's not god rolled. Yes, I can god roll one stat, but the other two aren't very good. Rather than just play and play and play and play and play and hope to get two god roll items and one or two god roll stats, but one that's not, I can spend mats to optimize it. Now, the optimizing will only do like a portion of it. So let's say the weapon damage maxes at 15% on a weapon. It was at 10. So I go to the optimization table and I spend a shitload of mats and I can take it to, you know, 12. Well, then the next time I go to do it, I can take it to 13. And the next time I go to do it, I can take it to 14. Eventually, I can get it all the way to the cap. It's just going to cost me a shitload of mats, which you get those mats from, you know, farming that item. It's the mats that I get from breaking down other backpacks to increase a backpack, if that makes sense.
Right.
So while trying to find that backpack, I'm getting the mats that I need to turn around and optimize a backpack. Like it's so much more streamlined on everything. The gameplay is almost the exact same. They added a new map. So now there's a New York instead of just, so we're back to New York, like Division One was. And me and you have had this exact conversation about you've always thought of the Division as a Christmas game.
Yeah.
And I remember kind of telling you like, oh, well, you know, I guess, yeah, it is at Christmas or whatever, but I thought it was just a winter game. I didn't think it was a Christmas game. I thought of you so hard. We were doing a mission and full on had an area that you're in and there's a speaker that's just blaring Christmas music the whole time, and there's like Christmas trees and there's all this like Christmas decorations, and you're like in front of the, basically it's almost like you're in front of Macy's, right? Yeah. And so there's all this like Christmas decorations, all this stuff, and it's just like blaring out Christmas music, and I'm like, oh my gosh, Phil would love this.
Yeah. No, those all sound like really positive changes. I mean, I can only get into one of these like kind of life games, if you
I think I had told you guys offline, in my opinion, they've done a really, really good job of listening to their player base and making good positive changes on this game. Mm-hmm. And I believe that Division 2, because now it also has passes and season passes and things where you accrue gear as you play that you can get the premium or just get the free, you know, so it's got like a battle pass or, you know, a Rocket League pass type thing. And so to me, it's a live service game now. And I think it's the best live service game that Ubisoft has, which you have talked about some of the other Ubisoft games that are kind of going to some or starting to try some of that stuff and they don't do it well. This is done well. So, you know, maybe the other teams should borrow from this team. Yeah,
maybe take a look.
I will say I'm having a good time with it and really, really enjoying it.
Yeah, I played the first one pretty heavily. Really liked the first one, played through the whole story and everything. Yeah. I started the second one and didn't get very far. What I found really frustrating with the second one at launch was that I found that if I was playing by myself, I was very easily overwhelmed. The game got hard in that you had enemies coming from you from so many different directions, and you were a single point for them, that they could surround you really easily. And I just found it frustrating to play, honestly. Like, I would die a lot, and I was like, this is kind of like, if my brother got on and we played together, like, it was night and day. Like, even just two people in the world seemed to like split it enough that people wouldn't just literally surround you in an instant,
going in on you.
And so like, because he fell off, I was just like, I'm just done. I don't want to play. I probably played like 10 hours of the second one or something. I think too that I didn't like the Washington DC setting as much as the New York setting.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know. I think the reason why, because we had this debate about Destiny versus Division, and I thought about it a bit, and I'm like, what is it about it that I think? And I think the biggest thing for me is just the speed of gameplay. I always found, and maybe they've changed this, but the Division was just slower. It was a third-person cover-based shooting game.
Yeah,
you needed to be a little bit more tactically savvy with what you were doing.
So I would say that's gear-based. Like, I am a shotgunner. I literally pull out a shield and don't go into cover and just run through blasting people face-to-face. And I'm, like, flying through shit. Interesting. So it depends on your build. On how what you build and what, like, whether you're a sit back, take cover, pop out. Like, I'm all armor and beef and like I want to be up in your face, and that's where I'm at. So I play fast and quick, which a bunch of my group does. That's part of how we're so quick and fast. Like, we run through things like wow.
I also recall there not being like a jump button and things like that, right? Like, you
there's not vault a jump. Over. Yeah, you vault over things, but there is not a jump.
Yeah, so like it's definitely in different. General, right? Like, there's a different pace about Destiny.
For sure, because I played a ton of Destiny as well, and I agree with you entirely on that.
Yeah.
So the last little thing I'll say is I don't know if it's just a style of gameplay or if they have changed things, because I don't really remember what you're speaking to of it being harder. I don't remember if I had or didn't have that. But I'll tell you right now, as the game stands today, the state of the game is playing by yourself is far easier than playing with a full group. So the difficulty scaling is set up so that you get better loot when you play with a group because there's more mobs. And each mob has the same percentage of chance of dropping something. And there's more elites, which have a much higher chance of dropping something. But when you play alone, there's less mobs and they have less health. So playing alone, you can fly through things a lot more than you can. Basically, when you play with a full group of four and you try to go through, it's more of them and they have more health. So even if you're just honed in on one of them, it takes you a lot more rounds to get through them because they're more of a meat shield than they are when you're by yourself. I mean, you could have four people and everybody's on their own target. It's going to take you four times as long to kill that target. you know what I mean? You almost have to like go, all right, we're going to like systematically take people out left to right or something, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, that makes sense. Very good. Yeah, no, that's, I mean, I'm happy for you and for people that are Division fans that the game really speaks back to its core audience.
Yeah.
And that they've gotten it to a good place. And I hope that whatever that team does next, which if I recall correctly, they got
a Division Heartland coming out.
There's Division Heartland. Yep. When do they have a release date on that yet?
Man, I don't know. I think it's kind of maybe gone dark. When I looked at it, the last article I was finding is that it was originally supposed to come out like March or something last year, and that they delayed it until, you know, February or March this year, but there's not been any updates and it ain't out. So I've not seen anything that says when it's now new delay is, or if it's been canceled or what. Like, I've not seen anything really, but they were talking about it last year and then delayed it to this year, and it's past its delay date.
So I found an article here from Segment Next that says this is dated March 22nd of this year, so about a month and a half ago. The Division Heartland, a free-to-play standalone game set in the expansive Division universe, could be released sooner than expected. According to a report by X-Fire earlier today, a number of playtesters have confirmed the Division Heartland to be in a fairly finished state at the time of writing. The game feels, quote, almost ready, end quote, to release in the coming months, suggesting that publisher Ubisoft could be making an announcement soon.
Okay.
That could be cool if it kind of was like a late summer release. That could be a good.
And I don't know a whole lot about it other than it's supposed to be like a battle royale. It's supposed to be kind of like the Division's version of a battle royale.
Well, it says The Division Heartland is okay. The game, for example, is said to feature six different characters split between three playable classes, each designed around unique roles. The Division Heartland is furthermore said to pit players against AI-controlled enemies that are also split between six categories of different attributes. There will be two modes to choose from: PvPvE mode called Storm and a PvE mode called Excursion. Storm being the main go-to mode by bearing similarities with the likes of Escape from Tarkov.
Okay. So less battle royale. I mean, yes and no. There's some battle royale-ishness to Tarkov too.
So anyway, that is coming. But also, I was going to point out that I'm pretty sure that the Division 2 is developed by Ubisoft Massive.
Well, and they're about to get another big update too, by the way. Like, I came onto this whole Warlords thing late. They've got another big DLC or expansion that's about to hit. Like, we're on season 8 of Warlords, and they had planned to come out with whatever their DLC or whatever expansion was, and they have delayed it. And so season 7 was literally a rewatch of season 1. I'm not kidding you. It took season 1 and called it season 7 and took all of the stuff from season 1 and just rewatched it into season 7. And they didn't like hide that they did that. They basically were like, "We weren't ready. We're busy working on this other thing. We thought it'd be done by now. We've been delayed." Like, it's the exact same.
Interesting.
And now we're on season 8. It's a full rewatch of season 2. Like, full. And then they're just like, we're just not working on seasons because we're doing this other thing. So to me, it's not bothering me because I didn't play season 2 or season 1. You know what I mean? Like, right. So, but I will say that the community right now is kind of like, the hell? the right. Longstanding people, they're not getting anything out of this.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I guess where the point I was going is Ubisoft Massive is the developer behind The Division 2. And their next main game is supposed to be coming out this year. It's supposed to be the new Avatar game, Frontiers of Pandora, which I actually thought looked really cool at the reveal last year. But they're also supposedly developing a new Star Wars open world game.
That's right.
So, I hope that if nothing else, The Division 2 is that playground where they figure out how to do this right and these upcoming games benefit from it. If nothing else, that Division 2 has a legacy in that regard.
Sure. So the last little thing I'll say, and they're very different, and I'm not saying negative, but I made this comment. I think the Division 2's graphics are freaking outstanding.
Yeah.
So they've done a really good job.
I don't disagree
with
you there. I think it is a very visually compelling game to look at, for sure. All right. Should we jump into some news?
Do it.
All right. We don't have a whole lot, but there are a couple of big stories here. Let's kick it off with the biggest one for this week. Embracer Group has agreed to acquire a large part of Square Enix's Western development arm for $300 million. The deal will see Embracer Group acquiring Crystal Dynamics, Eidos Montreal, Square Enix Montreal, and a catalog of IPs including Tomb Raider, Deus Ex, Thief, and Legacy of Kain. It will also include, quote, more than 50 back catalog games, end quote, from Square Enix. These have not been listed by name yet, but that could potentially mean that Square Enix's Marvel games are also included in this deal. That would be Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy. The total acquisition includes around 1,100 employees across 3 studios in 8 locations around the world. According to Embracer, the total purchase price will be $300 million, quote, on a cash and debt-free basis to be paid in full at closing, end quote. The deal is expected to close in the second quarter of this financial year between July and September of 2022. Before I get into some press release statements, what was your initial reaction to this news?
A bit surprised of why they essentially, you know, because it's not like they're getting out of, to me, this is, first off, let me say, like, when you first read this, like, Western development, I mean, it's not that they're, like, getting out of selling, you know, games in like the United States or whatever, right? Because they're still going to have Final Fantasy. They're still going to have a lot of games, Kingdom Hearts, etc., that are still sold and still fully, you know, they're still going to be in gaming in the Western world, if you will, right? It's just their correct. Their development of games.
Yeah, their developer teams, the correct. Ones that were studios based in Western correct. Countries, that were under the Square Enix umbrella.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I would say that they're not like crazy good IPs. I don't know, again, like you said, what's in these 50, but like, I don't know. Me personally, Tomb Raider is the biggest thing, and that's an IP there. Like Legacy of Kain, I don't know. You know, Deus Ex, I've never played any of the Deus Ex games. Like, they're not big to me. I don't care. Thief, I think Thief is something that, you know, they expected to be good. It's kind of sort of a, you know, stealth kind of open world. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's a huge sell, a huge bringer either. So I don't know. To me, it's not like, obviously, I mean, it's $300 million, right? But in comparison to what some of these other big deals have been doing, it's nothing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just don't think it's that big of a deal for Square Enix.
Okay, yeah, so I guess my initial reaction, I kind of had two very, very strong initial reactions. One was, you know, $300 million does not seem like a lot. And I right. know that you're saying that the IPs aren't huge, and you're probably correct there. I know that the Tomb Raider games did not sell very well, even mm-hmm. though critically and like...
It's the biggest name, sales weren't great.
Yeah, the sales were not that great for the reboots, but critically they did really well. Mm-hmm. And honestly, if you haven't played those Tomb Raider games, really good games. Yep. They don't get enough credit. And this is what I think. I don't know if it's a marketing thing that Square Enix just sucked at or what, but like, apart from Marvel's Avengers,
right,
pretty much everything else that's come out of these studios over the last 10 to 15 years has been really good.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, there's a, I don't know. I don't know if it's just Square Enix or what, but yeah, I don't know. I saw $300 million and I was like, wow, that's really not a lot. You're getting,
right. yeah, so
you're say, getting three really good studios, or at least I thought were really good mm-hmm. studios. And yeah, you're getting a couple high of, about
Crystal Dynamics. I know that.
Yeah, and you're getting a couple of strong IP in Tomb Raider and Deus Ex. Now, Thief and Legacy of Kain have been on the shelf for a while, but I don't know. I guess maybe if you really break it down though, and you think about it, they really aren't huge IP. They're not massive sellers. Their recent games haven't been huge hits in terms of financial hits. So maybe that has what brought down this value. Maybe also because, you know, they were willing to pay in all cash or whatever, but I don't know. That was my first initial reaction was, wow, that's really not a lot considering where the market has been going recently and how much some of these studios have been valued at.
Yeah.
My second thought though, like almost immediately I went to, wow, it's kind of weird that Microsoft didn't buy this. If Crystal Dynamics and these studios and these IP were on the table, why did Microsoft not buy them? Especially when you consider that Microsoft are currently engaged in a relationship with Crystal Dynamics right. for Perfect Dark Zero.
Right.
Which then immediately made me go, maybe there's something under the water here, which is why Microsoft avoided them, which is why it wasn't that much of a, you know, it was only $300 million. Yeah. Like, could there be something under the water here that we're not seeing?
Square Enix was unhappy with them. There's something yeah.
I mean, there's certainly been quite a few articles recently or interviews recently from the leadership in Japan of Square Enix saying that they have been disappointed mm-hmm. with the handling of these games and mm-hmm. their release and their sales and everything. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know. It made me just kind of wonder, like, maybe Crystal Dynamics are not as all they're made up to be. So then, like, I jumped to that next thought of, like, well, shit, like, what does that mean for Perfect Dark Zero? So, like, they're good enough to work on Perfect Dark, but they're not good enough for us to be interested in buying them when it's literal fucking pennies compared to what they just paid for Activision Blizzard.
So, I guess my next thought process that I had... So, you asked me what was my initial thought, right? But so my initial thought is the headline, right? And the, you know, you get what, okay, here's what happened. What is my thought? But when you go deeper into, like, when you start getting into like the CEO and what they're talking about, I felt worse about it after hearing all his comments.
Yeah. So because let me read those out.
You read the comments, but I just want to precedence it first with my opinion of those real quick was everything he said felt fire sale-ish.
Yeah.
Like, we need money. Like, yeah. That's what it sounded like. Anyway, just go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. So here's
the we need money and then it's only $300 million. So that's where I'm like, that's why I feel like I needed to say it in, because we're sitting here saying it doesn't feel like a lot of money. And then it feels like he's kind of dancing around saying we need money, and then it wasn't a whole lot of money. It's just weird.
But yeah, maybe Square Enix itself is up for sale, the larger company. Who knows? But yeah, so here's the couple press releases. First from Square Enix. The deal, quote, enables the launch of new businesses by moving forward with investments in fields like blockchain, AI, and the cloud. Going forward, the company's development function will comprise its studios in Japan, Square Enix External Studios, and Square Enix Collective. The company's overseas studios will continue to publish franchises such as Just Cause, Outriders, and Life is Strange. So they certainly kept a hold of some of the IP. They didn't give up all of the IP.
Right.
But yeah, it does sound like we need money, but then it's also we need money for blockchain.
Right. Which we'll talk about in just a moment. Yeah, which
we will talk about in a few moments. So on the other side, from Square Enix America and Europe CEO Phil Rogers, he had this to say, quote, Embracer is the best kept secret in gaming, a massive decentralized collection of entrepreneurs whom we are thrilled to become a part of today. It is the perfect fit for our ambitions. They make high quality games with great people sustainably and grow our existing franchises to their best versions ever. Embracer allows us to forge new partnerships across all media to maximize our franchise's potential and live our dreams of making extraordinary entertainment, end quote. I mean,
again, that's that to me, that whole thing that he just said there, that's a corporate speak for saying nothing again. That is, hey, I have to talk. I have a new boss now, and I'm going to say how amazing they are. Like, this guy could have not known who they were yesterday. And today he's like, I'm so excited. It's amazing. They're like, because they're cutting his paycheck. Shut it.
Yeah.
Like,
it
says nothing there to me.
Honestly, I actually think there is a bit to be read here. If you look between the words, in that it's saying, hey, maybe we are struggling. We're not producing things in a timely enough manner, in a cost-effective manner. Our IP are struggling, and we think that this group can help us get back to where we were. That's kind of what I read out of this. I don't disagree with you that there's a whole lot of sort of nothing here, too.
But it just felt like kiss ass to me. I mean, I see where you're saying that.
Yeah.
You know, after you say that, I read back through it, that's what's hard about anytime, like just reading email or anything, is like getting tone on it, right? Like, what is the tone? Because two people can read one thing and get two completely different stories out of it. So after you explain your side, I read through and I'm like, okay. But when I read it, I immediately just took it as corporate speak of meaning nothing. Kiss ass to my new boss.
Yeah.
But I see what you're saying on it.
Yeah. And that kind of lines up with why didn't Microsoft buy it? Again, maybe there's something under the water here that we're not seeing that should be concerning. Embracer itself, for those of you that are kind of like unsure or don't remember, Embracer Group has 10 operative groups as its direct subsidiaries, Amplifier, Game Invest, Asmodee, Coffee Stain Holding, Dark Horse Media, Deca Games, Easy Brain, Gearbox Entertainment. So Borderlands developers are also owned by Embracer Group, Koch Media, Saber Interactive, and THQ Nordic. All told, they have an ass ton of studios, dude. They have 124 internal studios that report up through the Embracer Group. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. So, I mean, maybe this is the Borg hive mind of independent developers effectively working together. I don't know. I hope that I hope that Crystal Dynamics and Eidos Montreal can come back. I hope Tomb Raider can live again better. I mean, I've banged this drum on the show before, and I'll keep banging this drum. Like, Guardians of the Galaxy is a really freaking good game. I don't know. I know you said you bought it and you kind of started it.
I have been playing it. Yeah. The problem is I left town for a week and came back and started playing The Division, damn it. Yeah. I've not gone back to it. It's been good. It's been fine. But I will get back to it, but I've not finished it. And it's been good.
Yeah,
the best part of the game, I don't love... Here's just 2 seconds. I don't love the gameplay. By far the best part of the game is, and I think you have said this, is the story / the camaraderie between the team back and forth that's happening while you're playing, you know, all that stuff. I definitely have gotten to a point where I've gotten to a boss that I'm like, I'm literally at a boss where I'm like, I don't know what to do. I'm stuck. This boss is immune to all of my attacks. And it just, I'm playing for 400 minutes, you know, straight almost. And I'm like, I don't, and they're like, you know, and like you said before, it feels like we're missing something, you know what I mean? But yeah. I'm not getting any hints on what the hell to do.
There's a couple boss fights that are, I would just recommend looking up a video.
That's what I end up having to do.
Just look up a YouTube video. Don't bang your head off a wall.
Yeah.
Just look up a YouTube video for sure.
I don't know how early this is. And I know the story can change depending on what your choice is.
Are you in the Groot. Castle? I know the boss you're talking Groot. About. Yeah, that is one of
did
two
you say
bosses.
Groot or Rocket?
I did Groot.
Yeah.
As well.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's two bosses that I found particularly frustrating in the game, that was the first one for sure. Just look up a video.
Yeah, I will.
I mean, it's not a perfect video game by any stretch, but it is. And like, you're absolutely right in that the gameplay is maybe slightly better than serviceable.
Yeah.
But like the Uncharted series is one of the most critically acclaimed series in terms of story and blah, blah, blah. Right. That game is its gameplay is serviceable.
Yeah. Right.
So like you can be a really good game as long as like the other trappings around it are really good. So anyway, we spent a lot of time on the story. I will say one last thing. There was a statement issued by the initiative. Xbox Studio, the initiative, has stated that it will continue to co-develop Perfect Dark following news that Embracer Group is acquiring Crystal Dynamics. Quote, "We're excited to see Crystal Dynamics take these next steps with their studio. Our teams have made great progress in building Perfect Dark together as co-development partners, and we will be continuing this work with them in their next chapter," end quote. So it doesn't seem like anything's changing there on that front.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. Number two, I felt like this was I don't want to laugh at Square Enix because I like Square Enix and I don't want to see them like really struggle. But also when you take them at face value of we need money to invest in blockchain. And then the next story I fucking read is this. It's kind of hard not to laugh. Here we go. Number two. Meanwhile, new reports suggest sales of non-fungible tokens, NFTs, have declined 92% since their peak last year. That's according to data from website Non-Fungible, collaborated by the Wall Street Journal, which shows that NFT sales fell to a daily average of about 19,000 this week, down from 225,000 in September. The numbers of active wallets in the NFT market also fell significantly. The data shows down 88% to about 14,000 last week from a high of 119,000 in November. Interest in NFTs also seems to have declined significantly. According to Google Trends, searches for the term peaked in January and have fallen around 80% since.
Fallen way off.
Fucking crashing. Yeah. Like, this is full-on cardiac arrest here.
Yeah.
Please, NFTs die. That's fine.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, I think the entirety of the gaming community has been saying for a while, we don't want NFTs, we don't want NFTs, we don't want NFTs. And all these companies are hiring, like, all right, you are the new role. You're our NFT coordinator, right? You know, yeah. Like, stop.
If I had been just hired into an NFT coordinator role, I'd be putting my resume out to other companies.
Yeah, right.
Give me a different job.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Here we go. Number three. Jason, I found this article interesting for two reasons, but one was for you. I thought of you immediately when I saw this. But two is for the party. I hate that I'm a
Fortnite guy now, damn it.
But number two is the second part of this, but here we go. Fortnite has become the first free-to-play title available on Xbox Cloud Gaming. Players can stream the game on a phone, tablet, or PC without having to subscribe to Xbox Gold or Xbox Game Pass. I'll say that again. No subscription to Xbox Gold or Xbox Game Pass is required to play Fortnite through Xbox Cloud Gaming. This also gives players another way to play the game on iPhone or iPad, despite the fact it was removed from the Apple App Store in 2020. And that's the second part that is really interesting.
That's the most interesting part.
Yeah. Epic have figured out how to get around Apple and get Fortnite back on iOS devices. Yeah,
for free.
For free. Exactly. So here we go. Quote, today we reach another key milestone as we expand our business model to make cloud available to more people in even more ways, going beyond Xbox Game Pass to provide our first free-to-play title. This is from Xbox Cloud Gaming Vice President Catherine Gluckstein. In partnership with Epic, Fortnite is available via Xbox Cloud Gaming. If I could speak, in partnership with Epic, Fortnite is available via Xbox Cloud Gaming, so fans can play on an iOS device, Android phone, or tablet, or Windows PC through web browser. This is just the beginning for us. We're going to learn, implement feedback, and in time look to bring even more free-to-play titles to players through the cloud, end quote. Epic's Tim Sweeney said on Twitter, monumental news, everyone. Fortnite is now available to play for free, streaming to web browsers on iPhone, iPad, and Android via Xbox Cloud. No subscription required and no 30% Apple tax. Very pointed statement there on Twitter.
How much do you think Epic paid Microsoft for this?
I don't know. It's really interesting.
Clearly, there's money going across here. It's a partnership. It's a deal. It was big for them to get back on Apple, right?
Like, yeah.
I know it's not the 30%, but I mean, you know, movies don't show up on Netflix for free.
That's true.
Epic definitely paid Microsoft for this.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I'd be interesting to know how much this was.
I find it also interesting that you have Sony, PlayStation, who just invested a massive amount of money after already investing a massive amount of money into Epic. PlayStation also have a cloud streaming service.
You're right. And it was for the cloud stuff. Holy crap.
But Epic have gone to Xbox to get Fortnite back out to these other devices. I find that very interesting.
Yeah.
Epic know what's working. Well, they know where the right place to go.
I don't know the answer to this. Okay. Can you stream any PlayStation stuff to your phone though for an Apple today? Maybe they're working on stuff in the future, but as it stands today.
No.
I didn't think so.
You can do PlayStation Now streaming to PC though.
Okay, but what I'm saying is that may be why they went to Microsoft is because Microsoft has the ability to get back to phones and iPads, which is what they don't have. You know what I mean?
Yeah, clearly PlayStation do not have that capability.
Right. So that I'm just saying like that may be why they struck this deal is because it gets them back in where they have been gone for 2 years.
Yep. Yeah, it's just interesting. It's interesting to see who are the leaders in the different parts of the market.
Yeah.
And I think it's clear that Epic are a group that will go with whoever they need to stay where they need to stay in terms of their position in the market. And so it's just interesting to look at and read into those subcontexts of like, okay, they went with Xbox here. So when it comes to cloud gaming, maybe Xbox are onto something. Maybe they have a path forward.
Well, and I would say like look back even a little bit deeper and say Epic is owned by Tencent. Or a portion, right?
True.
And Tencent is like massive, 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 massive in mobile gaming. Like, massive.
Yes, very true. Yep. I'm looking this up again now. Is Epic Games is not wholly owned.
No, they do not. They wholly own Riot, but they own part of Epic.
Yeah. They don't just own part of it, though, I should say. They apparently own 40% of Epic.
Well, that's part. It's a lot.
It's a big part of it. Yeah. Tim Sweeney himself, of course, owns greater than 50% of Epic Games, has control of the company, which is, when you think about how big Epic is, you think about how big Fortnite is, think about the money that it prints, and he himself, that dude is, he's got to be approaching high billionaire status at this point. Like, it's insane. It's insane.
Wait, what is their value? Insane. They're what? Like $50 billion? Epic or something like that?
I have no idea what Epic Games.
I think they're somewhere around $50 billion today is what I would have to guess. Because I think we had this conversation and they were somewhere in the mid-40s with inflation and all that kind of stuff. I bet you they are easily in the 50s.
It looks like...
Not that they've been valued recently. You know, but I bet you they are easy. I mean, maybe well above that.
Their valuation current. Well, no, see, that's like.
Yeah, well, because no one's been up for buying them, so they've not had to be valued recently.
Yeah, it's certainly in the to $50 billion range. Yeah.
We'll put it this way: if they were to be bought by someone right now, I wouldn't be one bit shocked if it was $100 billion.
Oh, dude, yeah. I wouldn't be. I'd actually be shocked if it was only $100 billion.
I guess that's fair.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Blizzard again, Activision Blizzard. I feel like every week, but listen, I've made it my mission at this point now to continue giving you all of the latest news on Activision Blizzard, so I will keep going. Number four, a lawsuit from New York City officials has accused Activision Blizzard CEO Bobby Kotick of rushing to sell the company to Microsoft in a bid to escape liability for wrongdoing and realize significant bonuses. As reported by Axios, the lawsuit was filed on April 26 by the New York City Employees' Retirement System and pension funds for the city's firefighters, police force, and teachers. The plaintiffs, who own Activision Blizzard stock, filed a lawsuit in a bid to gain access to its corporate books and records, which they believe could expose Kotick and its board of directors to misconduct that has depressed the company's share price. I mean, this is a different angle, though. I mean, they're worried about their money. They're worried about their.
I mean, sadly, do I put it past greedy businessmen to, you know, someone in, say, the position of, you know, Bobby Kotick, who clearly is not of the highest moral ground, to do something shady like, hey, we're going to have to pay out all this money and look at the extra money I can line my pocket with if we do this deal over here on the side and sell or whatever and do it quickly.
Right.
No, I don't put it past that at all. Am I saying he did do it? I don't know. Because they were clearly having way bigger fish or way bigger problems than, you know, that basically being bought by Microsoft was a lifeline, right? Right. Like, I don't know if it was intentional or not, but I don't put it past them one bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, if you look at their stock value, it's, you know, it's kind of held station for a while. It's kind of been very steady, you know, I guess that's pretty obvious. So if you look at its basic stock value going back, you know, 1 year, they were up around $90-something a share, and they had started falling. They dropped down to as low as $57 a share. They'd climbed back and were about steady around the $63 a share value. But you know, that whole period between,
but the drop, you know, November, wasn't due to the sale to Microsoft. The drop was due to
You're absolutely right. So this is between November of 21 2021 and January of 2022. So this sort of 2 month period when all of these allegations started coming out, we started learning about all of the toxic workplace, all of that. I mean, their shares were plummeting. They had hit pretty far, and we've seen since then how many more lawsuits and how many more accusations since then, right? But since the purchase by Microsoft, it immediately jumped up to $82 a share and has pretty much held station rock solid right around $80.
So, I mean, there's part of this that I just don't understand, basically, because the lawsuit is from people. It's being filed on behalf of the New York City Employees Retirement System, because members of that own stock, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not actually that group that is like saying we are losing money because of this. They're saying our members are losing money because of this. But mm-hmm. how is that the case if your stock has essentially gone back up because of the purchase? Like, I don't understand.
Well, the stock went back up, obviously, because of the value that Microsoft paid for Activision Blizzard, right? So if you didn't pull the stock back up in price, people would be running out there to buy stock because they know as soon as Microsoft buy it, they'd make like $30 a share off their purchase, right? So they had to pull the stock price up to kind of balance out what people could make off of
well,
it.
Okay. But
if you,
well, hold on.
So like, if you think,
if we go
like,
back and read
sure,
what they say though, specifically they're saying they rushed to sell the company in a bid to escape liability for wrongdoing and realize significant bonuses. So they're, it's not necessarily over the price as much as basically they maybe didn't pay what they were supposed to or something. They were out on bonuses or something.
And, well, they think Bobby Kotick is like, well, I don't want to get taken down and end up with nothing. So I'm going to sell now so that I get like a, you know, a sweetheart deal out of this thing.
Because
like
he has.
Because he owns so much of.
Yeah, he's coming out of this thing like a bandit, bro.
Yeah, because like Tim Sweeney at Epic, Bobby Kotick owns himself a shit ton of Activision Blizzard. But yeah, if you look at it, they are also saying in the lawsuit that, you know, that his actions depressed the value of the company's shares. And I think that is true, right? I mean, obviously you see this massive fall in the share price.
That's true.
Of these stocks because of all of these allegations that came out, right? The highest Activision Blizzard stock ever was in February of 2021. It sold at $104 a share. And by 6 months later, it had fallen to $57 a share, literally 50% of its value. So, you know, it's worth considering for sure. I mean, Activision Blizzard were at the peak of their game and then all of the shit started coming out and, you know, pretty precipitous fall.
And it hadn't stopped.
Now, I don't think that this is some indication that the deal is not going to go through or something like this. I really don't. In the end, I don't know. I mean, Microsoft are really getting the shit bag here in terms of like a lot of stuff is going on around this that they're going to have to wade through to get back to Activision Blizzard being something with a reasonable good name for sure.
Yep.
All right. Number five in sort of different Activision Blizzard news, maybe something slightly less to do with not positive, but less to do with
a positive story.
Yeah, no, it's not positive. So they have said that Call of Duty Vanguard's World War II setting was partly to blame for the game failing to meet its sales expectations, as well as a lack of innovation. I like how they don't say that, you know, it launched in the middle of like all of the shit last fall that was going on with the company.
Yep.
That maybe that might have had part to blame.
Well,
but
this was a big deal if you remember. When they were announcing they were going to come out with this, people were all like, why are you going back to that? That was the worst version of this game. And they were like, no, it was great. The last one we did had amazing sales. Well, they were like arguing it with what their player base was already saying to them. I mean,
true.
It's so stupid.
Yeah, it's very true. I'll continue here. While the game has been one of the industry's best-selling titles since its November 2021 release, its performance has been relatively weak for a new entry in the annual blockbuster franchise comparative to others, falling short of past releases, including its predecessor, Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War, which also was light in sales. In response, Activision Blizzard had the following to say, quote, "We are certainly addressing both of these issues with the 2022 launch. Development on the 2022 Premium and Warzone experiences is being led by Activision's renowned Infinity Ward studio. We are working on the most ambitious plan in Call of Duty history with over 3,000 people now working on the franchise and a return to the modern warfare setting that delivered our most successful Call of Duty ever," end quote. I wanted to read this quote out just because of the 3,000
people.
3,000 people. In comparison, we read a story earlier, right, where Crystal Dynamics, Eidos Montreal, and Square Enix Montreal were purchased. Total of 1,100 people.
Uh-huh.
Fucking crazy. Crazy how many people have to work on a Call of Duty title.
So just real quickly, I want to just point it out that when they come in here and say, like, I'm reading between the lines a little bit, and when they say we are certainly that its performance has been relatively weak for a new entry, even though it has had best-selling title since November 2021, what that means there is we sold a shitload of copies initially, which is good. We made that money, right? The $60, right. Let's average it out, say $30 or whatever, right? Because there's sales and all that stuff. But what Call of Duty has become accustomed to is the ongoing microtransactions and the, season passes and all of the just continual income that comes in. And great, we paid for your game, but when the game sucks, all those players fall out and are no longer playing it, which means they're no longer playing all those things. So all of the additional afterwards sales that aren't discussed a lot in these games that they make more money on actually than the game release is not there. So they're not making money on this game.
Yeah.
The way they're accustomed to.
I agree completely with your assessment. I have nothing more to add there. I 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
100%. So I guess we'll see what happens with this year's Modern Warfare 2. Not remastered. Just new Modern Warfare 2. Because that's not confusing.
Yep. I've never understood why games do things like this.
We have a Modern Warfare 2. We have a Modern Warfare 2 remastered. And now we're about to have a new Modern Warfare 2.
Yeah. I don't know why they do that. I've seen other games that do something very similar to this. The Star Wars Old Republic is, again, that's another one that this, like, why? Why?
It's confusing to you. I get it. All right. Moving on. Number six, the CEO of Intel has warned that the global shortage of semiconductors will now likely last until 2024. Pat Gelsinger had previously told CNBC that he expected the issue, which has caused production issues and shortages for the PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X, and latest graphic cards, wouldn't end until 2023. However, in a new interview with CNBC's Data Check, Gelsinger has updated his prediction and now expects the chip shortage to last until 2024. According to Gelsinger, the shortages are likely to continue because key manufacturing tools aren't as readily available as hoped, meaning there aren't enough chips being made to supply demand. This is starting to feel like the pandemic. It'll be over in 2 weeks. It'll be over in 6 months. By Christmas. It'll be like
this is like, but this is all the same stuff. Like, again, this is not unique though, just to semiconductors. Like, I mean, again, you remember I work for the eighth largest importer in the United States, right? Like, I'm seeing all this stuff, and it's all like, regardless of like, you know, the stuff that they're having happening at, you know, like the mining of the places to get all these semiconductors and all this stuff, like, you can't get this shit here. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and it's not getting better. It's getting worse. There continue to be things that like compound on other things like Russia. Right. And like, there's just all these things that just keep, like everything is going to continue to be hard to get, not just these semiconductors. Everything is going to be continuously hard to get going into 2024. And we'll see. It may continue to push.
Yeah, like, it may continue.
I'll just tell you, like, part of what's going on, and I just real quickly, because I've been in meetings, like when I was gone last week, I was literally in meetings. We were talking about this stuff. And, you know, someone asked the question, like, when will we see relief on the cost of freight, right? This isn't something specific to my industry. This is freight for everything that's being imported in. When will we see relief? When will we see it return back to normal? And they came back and said, it will never go back, ever. The industry has changed for forever. The dynamics have changed for forever. The logistics have changed forever. It will come back down, but we have a new floor. It will never, ever go back to as low as it was, ever.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't expect it to either.
Now, the shortages will finally fix, but the price will never go back, ever.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just the reality of it. It's definitely the reality of the situation, and it's not fun to hear, but it means that, you know, these new consoles will continue to be still harder to get, for sure.
Yep.
So we'll see how this all plays out. I'm really hopeful that they can get these things, like, properly on shelves, like, by Christmas this year.
Yeah.
But if they don't, I mean, you're talking about 2 years after launch of these consoles and still...
Somewhat can't short supply,
I mean, crazy. All right, our last little news topic, number 7, Jeff Keighley has confirmed his Summer Game Fest showcase will return on June 9th. So this is 3 days before the Xbox show, at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 p.m. Eastern, featuring a, quote, cross-industry showcase, end quote, containing multiple game announcements as well as the indie-focused Day of the Devs. The event looks set to be your main replacement for E3 2022, which has been completely canceled. So, something to look forward to there. Replaced. I saw some rumblings.
Gone. Forever.
Yeah, yeah. E3 is not coming back.
It's done.
I saw some rumblings that there's potentially things pointing to this is could be where we see Starfield properly shown off.
Cool.
Not at Xbox show, because apparently Xbox feel like they can reach more audience, like a bigger audience, through Jeff Keighley's show.
Okay.
So this could be potentially where we see
Won't talk about it at all on their Xbox thing, but make a bigger showcase here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So be interesting to see what we get. June 9th for this show, June 12th for the Xbox show. We're starting to get a picture, and it's only about a month away. It's pretty exciting. I do love my Super Bowl of video games time. I'm excited.
My birthday is the 7th, so it's right in there.
It's right in there. It's right in there. And hopefully we hear about something from PlayStation in sort of the same time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And Nintendo as well. They've got to have some stuff to say too. So we'll see what happens. That's what we have to look forward to. All right. That's it for news. Upcoming releases. This week, Trek to Yomi came out. Next week, Salt and Sacrifice, May 26th, and Sniper Elite 5. And then, Jason, you added in here, May 27th is when the Kenobi show releases on Disney Plus. They will premiere with 2 episodes. Should be pretty exciting. I'm really interested in seeing this. I'm really psyched.
Yeah, so am I.
I'm hoping it's a step back up from Book of Boba Fett. Yeah. I was disappointed with it.
I love Book of Boba Fett. Oh, it was great. Because it was just Mandalorian Season 3. It was awesome.
Season 2.5.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
That's right. Season 2.5.
Yeah. All right. In terms of game announcements, there was really only one game announcement that
I saw. Confused the hell out of me, by the way. So, before we go into this one, just real quick, I will say I'm still playing, like, religiously. I am playing a shit ton of, like, I probably play at minimum an hour a day on my Marvel Strike Force game on my phone. At minimum, an hour a day. Okay.
You're obsessed.
Every single day. And this Blizzard announcement is literally the same type of game, the same exact type of game of what I'm playing. And so it shocks me that Blizzard chose to make it specific to Warcraft instead of expanding their universe and saying just like Blizzard titles, everything. Sort of like what Heroes of the Storm is, because they would have so much, greater of a like champion pool or whatever. I'm really surprised by it. But anyway, go ahead.
All right. So Blizzard has announced Warcraft Arclight Rumble for Android and iOS devices. The free-to-play title was revealed during a live stream on Tuesday. It is a mobile strategy, fast-paced hero collector and villain collector game that has a vast PvE campaign, said Associate Game Director Adam Kugler. It also has dungeons and raids and PvP and co-op and everything you'd expect from a Warcraft game from Blizzard. We were super inspired by tower defense games. Our game isn't really a tower defense game. It's more our style to do a tower offense game, end quote. The game will let players collect over 60 characters from across the Warcraft universe, quote, brought to life as lovingly sculpted tabletop miniatures, end quote. I actually, like, I read this and I was like, oh, shit. So I watched the video of the announcement trailer and I was like, that actually looks really dope. I like the art style that went with this. Really neat. I wish that this was something I was interested in in terms of like the universe, because I love the way that they did this. I love the art style and the way that they did it as tabletop miniatures.
It's funny. I love World of Warcraft. I hate Warcraft. I hate Warcraft.
Yeah. It's definitely not my thing, but I will say I liked that. I really like that aspect of it. It looks, you know, if that's your thing, this looks pretty cool. It's just not for me. But wanted to go ahead and shout that out. All right. Free games, PlayStation Plus May games are now available. So reminder, FIFA 22, Tribes of Midgard, and Curse of the Dead Gods are available to grab for free now.
That's crazy, FIFA 22.
Yeah, FIFA 22. Now, FIFA 22 also, I believe, is now in EA Play or is about to be in EA Play.
I think it's about to be, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. So, you know, you can grab that on Game Pass as well here pretty soon. Speaking of Game Pass, here is your titles for this week. We've got Citizen Sleeper, Danganronpa 2, Ayuden Chronicles Rising, Loot River, This War of Mine, Trek to Yomi, and NHL 22 is also now in EA Play. As for May Games with Gold, those are something you can get if you want crappy video games for free.
Yeah.
Go check those out, I guess. You can still grab Hue. Still available until May 15th.
I also say this. I've been watching my wife play Hue on Game Pass. It's a cool concept.
Yeah. I played Hue a long time ago on the Vita.
Yeah.
I shouldn't disrespect it so much. Hue is not bad. It's just not on the level of FIFA 22.
No, it's just a cool concept. It's just different.
Yeah. Yeah. So Hue is out there. You can grab that. Yoku's Island Express is also out there. You can grab that, as well as Hydro Thunder Hurricane. I've never even heard of that. So those are out there for you to grab. As far as Epic's free games, Prey and Jotun Valhalla Edition have been confirmed as the next free games. Those will be available starting May 12th. Until then, you can still get Terraforming Mars for free. And then also May's Amazon Prime gaming lineup, as I said last week, Dead Space 2, Curse of the Monkey Island, Out of Line, Mail and Mole Plus, and Express Deliveries, Cat Quest, and Shatter, Tale of the Forgotten King. Those are available this month. That's it. That's it. Any final parting thoughts before we head out for tonight?
Send in your, you know, make sure everybody writes into the show. And let's Phil know that you have a request for our 100th episode to be in the nude. You know, just we need everyone to write in. We need 100 signatures. If we get 100 signatures.
Listen, nobody wants to see
have the camera zoomed in on his crotch while we record the episode. You know, that's what we need. We need 100 signatures.
No. You could get 100,000 signatures.
By the way, when I say we need 100 signatures, I just need two of you because I'm going to do it 98 times as fake accounts.
You will be banned from episode 100.
I need two of you.
This is not happening. Do not get your hopes up. It's not happening. All right. All right. I guess that's it. I should not have even given you the opportunity to have parting thoughts. Let's get out of here before Jason gets us in even more trouble. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the 94th episode of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Remember, like, subscribe, review on your podcasting app of choice. If you have any questions for the show, DM us on Twitter or Facebook. The show will be back again next Friday with episode number 95. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. Game hard.